The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Rachel Doyle, founder and president of Glamour Gals, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving on AM 970 The Answer WNYM in New York City.
Intergenerational conversations are so important. For seniors, where over half of those living in nursing homes will never have a visitor, as well as for young people. But how do you get these conversations started? Sometimes you need a tool, like makeup. That was the idea that launched the nonprofit organization Glamour Gals back in 2000. And it's a pleasure to have with us tonight their founder and CEO, Rachel Doyle. Good evening, Rachel, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Thank you for having me.
A beauty makeover. What a splendid idea. You were just in high school when you started Glamour Gals. What was going on in your life then, Rachel? And how did this whole thing get going?
I think as a young person, I was always driven to service. I walked a walk. I collected cans. I was at every service event. It was just who I was. But I noticed that service wasn't necessarily connecting with others. And I thought about, at the time, maybe a little selfishly, the things that I loved. And I loved beauty, fashion, and makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And why couldn't I take the two things that I was so passionate about, the beauty, fashion, makeup, and making people smile, and combine them? And at the time, my grandmother was living in a senior home across the country, and she had passed away, and I wanted to do something to honor her. And sort of all together, it came this idea of going into a local senior home, spending time with the women there, and more specifically, giving them a beauty makeover. The beauty makeovers I used to do with my girlfriends in my bedroom, maybe not the Kevin O'Quan, let's shellac the face, but it was this idea of bringing that same essence of how you feel when someone dotes on you and someone compliments you. So in August of 1999, I had the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I walked into a local nursing home. I maybe had gone once to play my violin at 2 years ago during the holidays. And I pitched the idea of something called Glamour Gals, where myself and my friends would come in and give the women their beauty makeovers. And the activities director stopped me and said, who's your corporate sponsor? Who's the adult in charge? And I'm like, got out my notepad, being like, oh, yeah, sure, I got this. Oh, yeah. I'll get back to
it's
you.
In the car.
Yeah. I walked out those double doors, got in my mom's minivan and said, you're an adult. Will you help me out?
And what's a corporate sponsor?
And now I'm really dating myself because I actually opened up the Yellow Pages and started calling, mm-hmm. cold calling beauty makeup companies. In just pitching them my idea. And a local Mary Kay representative,
right.
Tony Fischler, said, you know, I love this idea. I have some extra makeup. Why don't I come to your first makeover? I'll bring the makeup. I can even give you some tips on the makeover and get you started. So in January of 2000, myself and two girls from homeroom went into the local senior home who had sent out a press release.
Mm-hmm.
Which, unbeknownst to me, the New York Times showed up along with two local newspapers.
That's pretty good, I start.
I think there was more press there than people. But, you know, as a young person starting something, I remembered the vision of why I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to make someone smile and feel good and to have just a lovely afternoon with people.
Was there a seminal moment, Rachel, in those early days where you really knew you were onto something and were making a difference?
You know, it's interesting. Usually those moments come through a challenge,
mm-hmm.
and the beginning of those moments start pretty daunting or negative, and then the ending is, you know, you see why you do it, so it's important that you follow through, and that's what I always love to tell my volunteers now, because, you know, my moment is one of the very first makeovers that I had. I went in, you know, we had the group there, and the ladies were sitting at their seats, and I went over to a woman, and she wasn't smiling. She was very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I even checked with the activities director. Do you want me to converse with this person? She's like, yeah, go. So I think the bouncy, energetic teenager I was, I danced circles around her. I offered her the lipstick, the blush, and, you know, she said hardly anything, but she didn't move. She seemed to be, you know, just quiet about it. And after almost 2 hours of being with this person, I left the makeover thinking to myself, wow, maybe this organization or what I'm building doesn't really impact people, because I guess the instant gratification of being a teenager wasn't met.
Yeah.
And
where's my smile?
Yeah, where's my smile? And at dinner that night, I actually received a call from the activities director, who I immediately thought, I'm in trouble. Like, I'm not answering the phone. And, you know, she was double checking about, you know, you had seen Faye today, right? And I said, yes. You know, she was very quiet. She didn't smile. And she's like, that's why I'm calling. And she shared that Faye had been severely depressed, mm-hmm. had stopped eating, and said she started eating again after. And I think if I never got that call, I would have maybe even stopped doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
But for me, that really struck home because, you know, my grandmother went through the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think many people do. Actually, I was just speaking to a professor who's studying ageism, mm-hmm. at Stevens Institute of Technology, Dr. Little. And she shared that on average, most seniors are happy people, happier mm-hmm. than most generations.
That's right.
So hearing that was like, you know, this is something that's institutional in our communities we need to address.
Mm-hmm.
And the senior population is going to be the oldest it's ever been in the next 20 years. Our population is going to be the oldest. And there is huge discussions about around quality of life, policy, you know, social economic decision making that has to happen with the aging generation. And so it's important that young people can have a dialogue.
That's a beautiful story. Well, walk us through this process. How do you enlist these young people to become volunteers? And then how do you connect with more than that, just one senior home, but a lot of senior homes to get this thing going? So tell us about how that works.
So in the beginning, I have to say the good old fashioned press was a huge driver for interest. You know, we were in every teen magazine and we would get calls and emails and we would grow our base that way. Now with social media and after 19 years of service, we have people, younger cousins, mm-hmm. my friend from another school. Somebody texted me, this is what I have to do in life.
Yeah.
My mom told me, my great aunt told me, you know.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth mm-hmm. is really viral still. It's still a really strong indicator. So we have all the technology tools to guide people toward the resources to get involved. So we have our website, of course, which is the first place you hit. It's sort of our storefront, if you want to call it, and you can see how, you know, you can get involved. And we used technology in a way to grow. So from those two volunteers to almost 2,000 around the country, mm-hmm. we found that as a small, when it was just a volunteer of one managing things and then growing a staff, using technology to be able to communicate with large groups in an efficient manner is what. So we have an onboarding online chapter system that the volunteers register in. They receive notifications. They create a chapter online that has a host of tools and resources that keep them going, because, you know, if volunteering was easy, everybody would do it. But you need that sort of older sister there cheering you on in your service.
How many chapters do you have now and how many states are you in?
We serve about 100 communities. Mm-hmm. And I say communities because a chapter can be made up of, for example, in rural Ohio, four high schools coming together serving one senior home. Or in Staten Island, we have one high school visiting four senior homes. So it's really interesting how the students and the demand or the need in the community is how the chapter is built. So mm-hmm. we give that flexibility in the structure that we provide.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when the volunteers go to a senior home? How long are they there? What do they do? How frequently do they come?
Do you have 5 hours to explain the variation? You know, what's great about how we build this organization is that we give a framework for leadership positions so students can really own their chapters mm-hmm. and bring their own ideas and creativity to it. So what we might start with is a little bit of the gimmick of the makeup to say, here's an easy way to introduce yourself. If you have nothing else to talk about, you say, what color lipstick would you like?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like us to paint your nails today?
Conversation starter.
It's just the starter.
Yeah.
And then from there, the students say, well, now that you look great and you feel good and we're talking, let's stay for tea. Let's, you know, play the Wii game together. Mm-hmm. Let's plan a senior prom together. And we have what we call a chapter creativity fund, where students in their journals can reflect and share their ideas. And a lot of those ideas, when they're shared with us, we can sort of economies of scale, bring them out to the other chapters and share them among the network of chapters. And we also provide resources for them to do it. Because as a high school student, you know, you might not have disposable income to you know, buy those extra things that keep you at the senior home, not just 1 or 2 hours, 3 hours longer or on a consistent basis. So I look at it as the framework that we provide as an organization is a springboard for all the other incredible things that those individuals bring to the chapter.
It becomes very organic. You know, it's been said, Rachel, that you've never really managed until you've managed volunteers. And you've managed a lot of volunteers, or somewhat of an expert in the subject. What are the keys to doing that effectively?
You know, I've always believed in positive leadership. Mm-hmm. I think that when you're not paying people, you can't rule as a dictator. And I see it so many times in business. I've had great conversations with my husband about, you know, the bosses we've had in the past and things like that, where I said, you know, in bad times, those people are the first ones to the chopping block, because, you know, negativity and not finding how to inspire and tap into the talents of your existing pool of people that you work with, that's sustainable leadership.
It's intrinsic.
It's intrinsic
motivation they have, as opposed to extrinsic being forced upon them.
Exactly. And I find that our mantra for our volunteers, or even internally with our staff or our interns or anyone involved in our network, is tapping into and finding what's relevant to them and finding why they're there. Mm-hmm. And when you can find out the why of an individual, in a process that makes sense for your organization, you know, they're invested in it and they have ownership in it. And in all different levels and ways, to be able to tap into that is what creates sustainable leadership.
You know, we talked about Faye before, but talking more broadly, when women get made up like this, they have this deep connection with a volunteer, how does their behavior change in that senior center?
Well, we say women, but we have plenty of men who come to the makeovers. Mm-hmm. It's a popular thing to come into a room of young people chatting with older people, although women do outnumber men 8-1 in most senior facilities, so we can broadly say women. You know, it's, I think at any age, when someone spends their most valuable resource, their time, with you, mm-hmm. and says, you're worth my time, and not only that, I'm going to make you feel good physically by touch, embrace, you know, and then reflect on it with you together, I think it's anybody would feel good after that. And we do an annual senior home survey mm-hmm. each year, and 100% of anybody we've ever get a response from, in terms of activities director, president of the senior home, sometimes a mother, a daughter of a mother who's in a senior home, they say, you know, 100% say their mood has changed for the better, and they long and wait for the next time the students come back.
Yeah, that's great. You know, as nice as it is having the students there, sometimes the anticipation of them coming is just as good. You know, they're looking forward
to
it.
They're looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's an event. There's an activity.
You know, they say loneliness or isolation is as bad as smoking 16 cigarettes a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of a secret. It's a secret issue because, you know, it's not seen, you know, like smoking, you see it on the streets or something, but, you know, with
it's
loneliness,
like mental health or
isolation,
something like that. You know, we
health.
Just don't talk, you can't see it, so it doesn't exist in a lot of people's mind. That's exactly right. And these thousands and thousands of volunteers that you've had, they keep reflective journals from, you know, the people that they visited as being part of Glamour Gal. Share with us some of their thoughts and reflections.
Well, we read them every day. Uh-huh. I think it's important for us as an organization who's spread throughout the country to have a barometer of, like, what's happening in North Carolina or, you know, Southern California, and we're in New York. So when you're able to read, you know, sometimes real experiences that happen to teens in the senior homes, you as an organization can remain agile and see that. But we had a professor at Yale read over our scholarship essay applications and some of the journals, and she found that there is a deep transformation that happens within students. And even our last year's volunteer survey shared that 89% of our volunteers share that the experience with Glamour Gals informs their future mm-hmm. careers and academic decisions, as well as 50% of them said they were interested in careers in STEM.
I know. You have so many. Why that correlation, do you think?
You know, I know that with our college chapters, many of them are pre-med students.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important, to deal with seniors and It's this idea of sort of bedside manner maybe in the future as a doctor. You know, you have to interact with people who have illnesses or things that are happening to them that they can't control, and being able to relate to, you know, patients in the future.
Yeah, and another thing you do with these young people is you have a leadership training program.
We do.
What is that, the focus of that?
You know, we found that there's this incredible exchange between the different generations. You have the seniors who are feeling dignified and having companionship and being able to share their stories and life advice. And then the students sort of digest all of that. And we give them the platform to take this experience and reflect on it through our journals. They can earn intergenerational service awards that can work towards scholarships, LinkedIn recommendations, recommendations for college, as well as we have a relationship with St. Peter's University, mm-hmm. a presidential full ride scholarship reserved for students who have academically achieved as well as achieved a certain number of service hours in journals with Glamour Gals. And I think what's really unique about how we approach leadership is this idea that it's based in service.
Mm-hmm.
It's an experiential leadership program. And all along the way, we're using the tools of technology and outreach. We constantly share the opportunities to foster being an empathetic leader within this.
Yeah, it's compassionate leadership. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, and how does that fit, you think, in the whole leadership framework these days? Because it's becoming, you're really on the cutting edge of that, and it's becoming, seems to me, more and more popular and important and critical in terms of leading organizations.
You know, a couple of years ago, we were hosting our 13th annual leadership training that we host every Saturday before Thanksgiving in New York City with upwards of 200 volunteers. We stream it live to our volunteers who can watch it with hot cocoa in bed mm-hmm. and somewhere else. It was a week or two after the Paris attacks.
Uh-huh.
And I said, this, and many people might say, oh, I don't want my son or daughter going into New York City. It's a big city. Something could happen. And I say, more than ever, this type of conference that allows young people to reflect in the way they do and hear and be inspired by leaders and entrepreneurs and people and professionals who can share how important it is to be an empathetic decision maker as a future leader or business person or teacher, whoever they become, is so critical.
Yeah.
And I think we just need more of that.
Yeah.
And we need our leaders to be that way.
Yeah, it is a critical skill to have in the 21st century. There's no question about it. You're a nonprofit, but you're also a business. So how do you operate and where do you get your financial support from?
I think my professors would be proud when I say diversified revenue
streams.
Oh,
there you go.
If you
many, many
it,
streams.
if you name it, we've tried it, you know? And I think...
What works the best?
I think it depends on the year and time. You have mm-hmm. to just... You have to look at your budget and plan for it. I think I'm really lucky to have council and board members who see, we have their critical donations happen in the first quarter. So it's, you know, we keep the lights on by saying, you know, we know that we have this base of donors who are willing to see the long-term vision in our organization and say, I'm going to make my donation in first quarter so we can always plan for that. And from there, open up their networks. You know, we have our executive council that I call it the Choose Your Own Adventure Council, because these people, you know, they've tapped into what really interest them in the organization, and then maybe they don't always have the time, but they have the resources or the network to share, and they do share it, which is great. So, it's everything from program revenue when you can, because a lot of times as we grow, we're growing into neighborhoods that need these resources and need us, but don't have the ability to pay that $100 registration fee.
Yeah.
And I've never wanted money to be a reason why a girl doesn't attend one of our leadership training. So we sometimes charge $5 to come, or they get sponsored.
Mm-hmm.
I know growing up, I had opportunities that were presented to me, and my parents said, I'm sorry, we can't do that.
Yeah.
And you miss out on being inspired by some incredible people. So I never want a financial burden to be why somebody cannot participate in our program. So, you know, I think that we brought on some really great corporate sponsors as well. This past year, we've been focusing on building that out. And I spoke at an HSBC conference before. My ex- executive council member invited me to have a dialogue actually about how all the different ways, the suite of ways corporations can get involved. And a lot of times it starts with just saying, here's the person you contact in the office to get involved, because most employees don't even know that. It's just such simple things as an email
blast. Remove the friction.
Remove it. Just say, here's the contact person. And it can start with 5 employees or 200.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times you're so professionals are so busy, they think, oh, I have to do this one day a year with 1,000 employees, where really, for nonprofits, it's better to have that consistency, a couple employees each month engaging with the nonprofit, because somebody who has 3 staff, you know, we can't, 1,000 volunteers, that's great. Once, it sort of doesn't necessarily serve the nonprofit always.
Not at all. So the business model is whatever it takes.
You got it.
You know, with all the wonderful work and the impact the organization has, I'm sure you're faced with a lot of challenges in addition to what you just mentioned. What's your biggest challenge right now?
You know, I think we're going through an interesting growth period where for the past 15 years, we've built a suite of really rich, incredible leadership, critical events in New York City, where the base of 50% of our volunteer chapters are. And we want to be able to preserve that quality that we've built over the past 15 years and still address the demand for probably upwards of our new chapter demand coming in is majority of them are outside of New York City. So as a nonprofit, we're trying to balance and say we need to find the funding to sustain the leadership development program that we've supported our local volunteers with, as well as then the resources for chapter engagement outside of the New York City area. And because we have like a chapter process that doesn't start really when they're volunteering. It's all the things you have to do to get to your first makeover or your first meeting. And that's finding your chapter leaders, scheduling with the senior home, getting approved by your school. And our staff walks the volunteers through that every step of the way. So we have a chapter process that it begins with that phone call, that text, that email, and then might take 1 month or 3 months to get the chapter started.
You know, let me close with this, Rachel. As you look back over these past 20 years, there is so much to be grateful for and so much to be proud of. In terms of gratitude, who would be the person that you would be most grateful for? And in terms of pride, what are you most proud of?
I would say I'm most proud of the volunteer that I've never met. When you create an organization, especially at such a young age, I got a lot of press around it, and it was like Rachel's thing. And as it continued to grow, it was I found that the story was much larger than me, because people would email me. I have hundreds and almost probably 1,000 emails from people around the world sharing how this means something to them or their family. So I'm most proud of the volunteer that I've never met in Wisconsin or Texas or Chicago, you know, all these places, that is inspired by the mission and about their work and not by me. And I think that is, as a leader, to have something that's bigger than yourself and that can live on and be successful without you is the biggest thing I could be proud of. And then the other thing is, of course, I think I'm just really lucky to have such an incredibly supportive family. We were joking before about the idea that, you know, my first board meeting was at the dinner table, and it was like, past the string beans, ended up in the notes, you know. We take very copious notes, you know. You know, and the lawyer was like, who's Alan? You know, that's my dad. He was at the dinner table. Well, he's not part of the board. Well, you know, he was at the dinner table. So, you know, I think that I'm really lucky to have a supportive family who have always fostered my crazy creative ideas that I had, and allowed me to explore them and in any way support me to do them. And I want to pay that forward now to the volunteers that I serve and the women that we serve in any way that I can.
Well, Rachel Doyle, the founder and CEO of Glamour Gals, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Tell us about your website and what visitors will find there.
GlamourGals.org. You can also find us on social media, on Instagram at _GlamourGals or Twitter, GlamourGals. Just Google Glamour Gals Foundation and you'll get us. But there's a great there's actually a 4-minute video right on the homepage of our website. I encourage everybody to take a little coffee break today and be inspired by all the incredible people in our organization.
Well, thanks, Rachel. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.